Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, talknation.org, for news and discussion about foreign policy, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. Attorney John Bonifatz joins us today to talk about the Downing Street Minutes and his group's call for the impeachment of the President of the United States. John Bonifatz was lead counsel in a federal lawsuit filed by soldiers, parents, and members of Congress who challenged the president's authority to launch a war against Iraq. You can learn more about the Downing Street Minutes and his calls to impeach George Bush at afterdowningstreet.org and johnconyers.com for further information as well. John Bonifatz, welcome to Talk Nation Radio. Bring us up to date on the latest developments in the Downing Street memos and also your efforts to try to call for an impeachment of George W. Bush.
Well, we have launched a campaign at afterdowningstreet.org, a coalition of veterans groups, peace groups, public interest organizations, and ordinary citizens across the country calling for a full congressional investigation into whether or not President George W. Bush has committed impeachable offenses in connection with the Iraq War. In light of the Downing Street minutes, there is now compelling evidence that the president and his top advisors may have engaged in a deliberate deception campaign to deceive and mislead the United States Congress and the American people about the basis for going to war against Iraq. These official government minutes coming out of London demonstrate that the president had decided as early as July of 2002, months before going to the United States Congress and to the United Nations, that he would be invading Iraq, and that the intelligence and facts were being fixed around the policy. If that is true, then such conduct, in our view, constitutes a high crime under Article 2, Section 4 of the Constitution, and the president should be held accountable for such misconduct.
Now, going back to the run-up for war, we've now learned from the Downing Street memos that the war was not only being planned, but also carried out much earlier than people knew about. Just talk about what that means in the context of constitutional questions about the way George W. Bush went to war.
Well, there's no question that Congress and only Congress has the power to take the nation into war. The framers said that very clearly in the War Powers Clause, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11 of the Constitution. And this president has sought to seize monarchical powers in taking this nation into this war in Iraq without any congressional declaration of war or equivalent action. But even worse than that, the Downing Street minutes reveal that this president in fact started a de facto war with bombings in Iraq long before he even purported to try to get congressional approval in October 2002. He had no authority whatsoever to essentially privatize the U.S. military and have it carry out bombing raids on his own personal decision when he, as president, does not have the power to start military action against another nation. So this, too, is deeply disturbing information coming from the Downing Street Minutes and cries out for a full investigation.
When you wrote your book, Warrior King, you also felt that the president had committed impeachable offenses. Do you feel that you've made progress in the time since where documenting those kinds of errors or crimes on the part of the White House are concerned?
Well, I think what we've done here is over the course of a number of months, we have helped to shift the debate and reframe the debate for many people in this country. This is not solely an issue about how immoral this war is, as important as it is to talk about that. But it is also an issue about the illegality and unconstitutionality of this war and the misconduct that has been committed by people in the Bush administration, including the president himself. And I think that we have to remember that the impeachment clause is there in the Constitution for we the people to have a recourse if, in fact, our president has abused his power and abused the public trust. That's why we have that clause in the Constitution, and it's important to lift it up and to raise this question when we see a president engaged in this kind of reckless behavior, taking this nation to a war that now we know was based on false pretenses.
It seems this White House is relentlessly moving in the direction that it wants to go in, regardless of public opinion, regardless of new energy on the part of the press to hold the White House accountable. So if the president and vice president are still pushing their agendas as if nothing were being disclosed, does that indicate that the people no longer really have this power, or just that it's their opinion that they don't?
Well, I think it's actually an indication that there's a real reckoning to be coming for this Bush administration, that it continues to defy the people's will and to defy what it's about to face. We have to remember that the Nixon White House had been engaged in both a break-in in the Watergate hotel and then a cover-up of that matter, and yet it went ahead and won a landslide victory for re-election for President Nixon. Only after that victory did the impeachment proceedings really begin. It's going to take some time, but I truly believe this evidence is going to continue to come forward, and what Special Counsel Patrick Fitzgerald is engaged in with the CIA leak investigation is also going to have a huge impact on this administration's credibility and its ability to continue to plow forward without any recognition of what it's about to face.
Well, again, we did see public support for the White House drop in response to learning what really happened in the Valerie Plame affair, and that indeed Karl Rove had outed Plame, and that others right in the top echelon of this administration were involved, including Scooter Libby in the vice president's office. Now questions are being raised about Condoleezza Rice and John Bolton and their roles in the Valerie Plame case. So is this an indication that the special prosecutor appointed by the attorney general will be empowered after learning what he needs to learn about what happened to Valerie Plame to go on with this investigation and take other roles in maybe areas you're talking about with regards to impeachment?
Well, I think the first issue actually is whether Patrick Fitzgerald will have his term extended beyond October to continue this investigation. And in my view, that is likely to happen given how close he seems to be to issuing indictments. And it will be very hard for this administration to stop this investigation after he has issued indictments. We also will be calling at afterdowningstreet.org for him to extend his investigation beyond the question simply of who outed Valerie Plame Wilson and whether a crime there occurred, as important as that issue is. We also believe it's critical to ask the question of why her identity was outed, and the why gets to the cover-up that this administration has been engaged in, because Valerie Plame Wilson's identity was outed, in our view, to continue the cover-up engaged with this White House with respect to these potential lies. Her husband, Ambassador Joe Wilson, had written an op-ed in the New York Times on July 6, 2003, that essentially revealed that the claim of sale from Niger to Iraq of uranium was false, and that he had conducted his own investigation for the Central Intelligence Agency in early 2002 and had come back and reported that. And he wrote in this op-ed to the New York Times that the president and his administration had twisted the intelligence with respect to this matter. That was such a huge revelation for this country and for the White House that they tried to do whatever they could to undermine the credibility of Ambassador Wilson, including engaging in outing his wife's identity. And knowing how important it was for the White House to try to discredit Ambassador Wilson, it links us to this larger scandal we have, which is the deception campaign this administration engaged in to take this nation into war.
The war is not going well. The White House has lost support, even in its own party, and continues to be challenged on this question of what to do next. The White House is offering this new solution of an August 15th deadline for coming up with a constitution. So we see this progress of constant chaos and constant arguments on the part of this White House that they're making progress and Iraq will be a shining example of democracy. Where are we in that discussion, John Bonifaz, in terms of your research? I mean, has this White House taken its lie campaign and propaganda effort as far as it can?
No question, it continues to do that. I mean, there have been several milestones at which point each of them we have been told things are going to turn with respect to Iraq. First was the capture of Saddam Hussein, then was the elections. Now we have this constitution being drafted, and each and every time it's been shown that this administration does not have a handle on this war, never understood what the real consequences would be, never analyzed or forecasted what to prepare for. We simply marched into this country, invaded this country with no plan whatsoever in terms of what would happen after we began the invasion. And this idea that Vice President Cheney and others believe that we would be met with cheers and with flowers, given that we have not, and given that this now is a war that's cost over 1,700 lives of United States soldiers, tens of thousands of Iraqi civilians' lives, it's incumbent upon this administration to tell us the truth with respect to this war and how we are going to get out of it. And they are refusing to do so, and it's now, therefore, up to us, the people, to demand that we bring the troops home now. If we're going to stand up for the troops, the best way to do that is to call for them to come home and end this war. Our presence there is causing more violence than if we were to exit. And we have a responsibility, no question, to provide humanitarian aid, to support whatever United Nations efforts would be in Iraq. But we must end the violence that's occurring with respect to our presence. And that means we need to bring our troops home now.
Now, there is, again, a propaganda campaign being ramped up. And we see how PR maven Karen Hughes has moved over to Undersecretary of State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs. And she will be doing PR there for the Pentagon. Part of what we have seen in the past week of news has been a changing of the language about the war on terror. Now it will be a war on extremism. Is it possible at this juncture, do you think, that the White House can regain some public support and momentum for its policies of preemption by using these PR tactics that worked in the past?
Well, you know, if things were not so serious and so outrageous with respect to what this administration has done with respect to this war, they would be laughable. I mean, the fact is, you can't just sugarcoat it, restate what the policy is in different language, and pretend that people are now going to see it in a different light. The reality is that these bombings continue, the deaths continue, the recklessness of this war becomes more and more apparent on a daily basis, and this administration has no plan. All it has is a PR operation, a propaganda machine, and a constant retelling of the same falsehoods day in and day out. And at a certain point, there will be a breaking point. At a certain point, people will finally say, enough is enough. This administration has never been telling me the truth about this, and it's time for this administration to be held accountable for it, and it's time to end this war. I hope that day comes very, very soon, but I do believe that the people of this nation are not going to be continued led down this path in which our leaders and our president have been clearly untruthful to us.
The Pentagon, apparently under orders from Vice President Dick Cheney's office, has also been working on contingency plans that are now made public about what they would do in the event of another 9/11-type terrorist attack on the U.S. And the plans include a large-scale air assault on Iran. It does come in the wake of some successes on the part of this White House to pass very unpopular bills, at least with the American people. Do you find that it's difficult to reach out to political activists and peace and justice activists, those groups working on behalf of soldiers,
and convince them that there is a hope in this project of yours to try to call for impeachment? Or are you getting a lot of a sense that people are depressed and feeling hopeless?
No, I'm definitely getting the sense of the former, that people are inspired to take action. They know that it's now up to us, we the people at the grassroots level, to stand up and protect our Constitution, as all three branches of government, frankly, have taken actions that have undermined the Constitution. The Congress is complicit in this war, and it's complicit in not standing up to this president, and the judicial branch is complicit, certainly with respect to the case that I and others brought on behalf of soldiers, parents of soldiers, and members of Congress on the eve of the war, trying to prevent the president from invading Iraq absent a congressional declaration of war or equivalent action. So I do believe that the people in this country, activists and ordinary citizens alike, recognize that the time has come for all of us to stand up and have our voices be heard. On July 23rd of this year, the third anniversary of the Downing Street meeting that occurred in London, 10 Downing Street, we organized and held house parties across the country where people gathered with their neighbors, their friends, and others to talk about the Downing Street minutes and their constitutional implications. We started off this project, a month out prior to the day with, the possibility of getting 100 house parties. We got 350-plus house parties, people all over the nation responding to this Internet-driven effort, really, to have our voices be heard. And there were also 8 town hall meetings with members of Congress, overflow capacity crowds in Los Angeles and Oakland and Detroit, throughout the nation. And I think it shows there's a hunger. There's a hunger in the country for a new kind of leadership. There's a hunger for us to stand together and stand up against this war. And if our leaders in Washington will not lead, then we will lead, and they will follow.
Just talk about what is happening with regards to this call for more congressional outreach and lobbying and the new calls for meetups on the 3rd of August.
Right. Well, the 3rd of August is certainly another important point here. There will be an effort to gather people in their home districts with their members of Congress and during this August recess, and to ask members of Congress to stand up against this war and to support Congresswoman Lee's resolution of inquiry, which is a new resolution she's introduced on July 21st this year that asks for specific documents from the White House and the State Department relating to the Downing Street minutes and relating to the lead-up to this war. This is a basic request that Congress ought to ask of the White House and of the State Department, and it will further the efforts to get to the truth of whether or not the Downing Street minutes are accurate. She will have a vote on this resolution under the House rules by September 16th of this year. And so there will be an effort with Democracy for America and Progressive Democrats of America and others to have these meetings with members of Congress in their home districts during the month of August to urge them to join Congresswoman Lee's resolution of inquiry. She already has 40 co-sponsors. We want the number to go much higher, clearly, and we want this investigation to proceed. This is a major next step for that to happen.
Now, you are calling for letters to the editor, for people to contact the press, and for them, of course, to call their representatives. When they do that, what are some of the main points that you would guide people toward that need to be raised about the investigation in Downing Street?
We're calling ultimately for a member of Congress to have the courage to stand up and say that the time has come to launch a formal inquiry into whether or not the president has committed impeachable offenses. And we hope and anticipate that there will be a member of Congress who will do that in the near future. In the meantime, we're supporting steps toward that route. We're supporting Congresswoman Lee's resolution of inquiry, which can be found on our website, afterdowningstreet.org. We're certainly supporting efforts of the Senate Intelligence Committee, efforts to get the Senate Intelligence Committee, rather, to conduct the investigation that the Senate Chairman, Pat Roberts, promised would be done prior to the election. which is an investigation on how the Bush administration used the intelligence. The claim has been for some time now that all this issue with respect to the weapons of mass destruction not being found in Iraq amounts to a failure of intelligence. And in our view, there's something more sinister than that, and that comes to the misuse of the intelligence, the fixing of the intelligence. And that investigation was promised by the Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Pat Roberts. It has not been conducted, and there will be, I think, renewed efforts to push for that to happen. And finally, we will be pushing for an extension of Patrick Fitzgerald's investigation into why Valerie Plame Wilson's identity was outed, why it was so important for the White House to try to discredit Ambassador Joe Wilson, and why it relates directly to this larger scandal of the lies that have potentially been told with relation to this. I think the main thing we would focus on is what Sir Richard Dearlove, senior British intelligence officer at the time in July of 2002, the head of MI6, the equivalent of our Central Intelligence Agency, what he stated at that meeting, and to try to get members of Congress to focus on it, try to get the media to focus on it, determine whether it's true. We simply need a basic answer to the question whether Mr. Dearlove was accurate when he stated intelligence and facts were being fixed around the policy, and only a full investigation will get to the bottom of that. Some people want to argue that fix only means exaggerate, or that fix means bolted on British English, and therefore there's nothing problematic here. Well, if that's the case, bring further evidence forward that demonstrates that Mr. Dearlove meant that, or that, in fact, people whom he met with in Washington, whom he was reporting about when he met with Prime Minister Blair and others in that meeting on July 23rd, you know, meant to say that they should bolt on the facts to the policy. But if the evidence goes differently, and if it shows that Mr. Dearlove was accurate in saying that the Bush administration would be manipulating the intelligence, would be lying about the intelligence, and that's because he met with Condoleezza Rice, apparently he met with George Tenet, and here are the notes to those meetings, here are the emails that went about during those meetings and after, you know, then I think we'll have something. And I do believe that what's likely to happen here as this process goes forward is there very well could be leaked documents that are in addition that further corroborate these contemporaneous official government minutes that reveal this incredible scandal.
Let's go over the Downing Street memo so that people know what's in it. And again, it's available online on your website, afterdowningstreet.org. This was copied to defense secretaries, foreign secretaries, attorneys general. And this, again, goes to two countries, England, the UK, and the US. And we don't know exactly who got this memo, right? I mean, we have some of the names, but we don't yet know who was involved in terms of carrying out the first phases or action phases of this plan.
Well, we do know that this meeting involved the top national security officials of the Blair administration, that they all presumably received copies of these official government minutes, but you're right, we don't know for sure whether they all received the actual minutes. We do know these are official government minutes. It's been, you know, reported this is a memo by people's common understanding of the word means a document that somebody writes to somebody else with perhaps their opinion or their argument. That's not what this is. In fact, this is an official government document, official government minutes of a meeting that occurred. And so what you have in this document are the quotes and statements of different people in the meeting and what they said, including Mr. Dearlove. Now, in our view, this is a smoking gun. It shows what was happening at the time in July of 2002 with an ally in this, coalition of the willing, supposedly, as the president has referred to it. And it is a direct report by Mr. Dearlove on meetings that he had in Washington just prior to the meeting in London at 10 Downing Street. So I think it's pretty compelling from these minutes that this issue of whether or not the Bush administration had already decided to invade Iraq and whether or not it was fixing the intelligence cries out for a further inquiry and further investigation. And that's why We're pushing for this at afterdowningstreet.org.
I want to end here by talking about the U.S. military and what some of the top officials in the military may be going through as they consider the White House and further plans. CENTCOM was briefed, and we're looking at 3 years ago and August. There's a date here, August 1st and 2nd. Rumsfeld, August 3rd. Bush, August 4th. These are briefings that had to do with real action plans being carried out. So obviously the members of the military in both the UK and America who were carrying those orders out know that the smoking gun is real because they were shooting it, right?
Absolutely. They were engaged in military action long before there had been any purported effort to get congressional approval. They were engaged in essentially taking on a decision that only the framers had ever determined would be invested in the U.S. Congress and we the people. They were utilizing U.S. military forces based on their own personal decisions or that of the president. And so they do know what these minutes reveal. The administration knows what these minutes reveal. And they've yet to come forward with any evidence that contradicts these minutes. No one has ever suggested since these minutes came out that they don't really exist or that this meeting never occurred or that this is a fake document. None of that has happened. What they have done is remain silent on it and hoped that the questions would go away and that the people would stop paying attention to it. And I think what they're finding is that, to the contrary, the heat is only building, and it continues to build as the CIA leak investigation continues to build, but it also continues to build because we, at the grassroots level, are doing an incredible amount of organizing to have our voices be heard.
Update our listeners, John Bonifaz, on what has been happening with soldiers and the families and members of Congress who did challenge the authority taken by the president and vice president in the war on Iraq.
Well, we actually kept the identities of our soldier clients very secret because we knew that they faced potential retaliation in the military. What we did do was to have these soldiers backed by parents of soldiers from around the country and by members of Congress, led by Congressman John Conyers and Dennis Kucinich, in this lawsuit filed in federal court in Boston on the eve of the war in February of 2003. And the story, really, of this case is a story of all three branches of government failing us, including the judiciary, the federal judiciary, which has a responsibility to state clearly what the law is, to protect and uphold the Constitution, and in this case, stayed on the sidelines as the president marched us into this illegal and unconstitutional war. Now, we continue to be in touch with some of the parents of these soldiers. We know that these soldiers that were in this case are back, some of them, and some of them perhaps facing orders to go back to Iraq at some point. But I do think that they will go down in history as having been courageous individuals in standing up to an illegal and unconstitutional war at great risk to themselves.
John Bonifaz, any final comments for listeners?
Well, I think that my main point that I would emphasize is that in order for us to create a different reality, we have to first be able to imagine that reality, to envision it. And that's what's happening around this country today when people stand up and demand change, whether it be from a question of the war to economic justice to our electoral process, education, to the environment. It's about envisioning a different reality. And when we can envision that, we can create it. And I do believe in the power of a people to stand up together and demand the truth out of this administration, demand accountability, and demand an end to this war. The Vietnam War ended because of people in the streets and people's demands and people's voices being heard. The civil rights movement came about because of people in the streets. We have a responsibility today to stand up for democracy, for the Constitution, and for an end to this war. And I really believe that we have the power to do it.
John Bonifaz, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
John Bonifaz is author of Warrior King, The Case for Impeaching George Bush. A specialist in constitutional law, his earlier groundbreaking work in Massachusetts was on campaign finance reform. I'm Dori Smith for Talk Nation Radio. This program was produced in the studios of WHUS Stores. For a transcript and discussion about this program, try talknation.org.